Hey everyone, I'm Jonathan Grzbowski, and this is a Blind Entrepreneurship Bonus episode brought to you by Penji, a podcast that helps entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision to profitability. This week's episode is coming from a Penji Masterclass that features Bruce Marabel, the co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle, an all-in-one dashboard to help HR professionals collect data, and we all know how important data is. In the webinar, Bruce details tips for onboarding and maintaining new talent, ways to reduce new employee turnover, and boosting productivity when you're in a new position. If you are a leader, if you are making decisions, please feel free to tune in. This is going to be a great episode for you. Head over to tbeshow.com and drop a comment on today's episode. I would love to hear your feedback. Go out there and execute your vision and enjoy the rest of the show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. The fact that I host a podcast but I never do own video is a good opportunity for me to make sure that my facial cues are right and that I look right and you get my good side. So, thank you for me on this video, podcast, show, whatever we're calling it. I'm Bruce Marabel, co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle. And as Kina mentioned, we're an all-in-one HR analytics dashboard. So the problem that we're solving and the value proposition we provide is pretty clear. Most HR leaders are looking to become more data-driven, because a lot of the rest of the C-suite and a lot of executives and companies are now looking to run a lot more of their business and make more decisions driven off of data. And so HR is no different. But the biggest problem that HR has when they're trying to become data-driven is that they typically have a lot of disconnected and disparate HR systems. So those systems can look like a payroll system, a separate HRIS, separate applicant tracking system or ATS, for employee engagement, performance management, Glassdoor, et cetera, et cetera. And so typically what you have is this HR person sitting in the middle of all of these different HR systems with very little training or experience with data visualization, data science. Very difficult for a lot of HR people to create bar charts, pie graphs, you know, pivot tables, that's speaking an alien language that most HR people don't even know.
Yeah.
So typically what happens is that the HR person is bombarded with all these questions. What is our turnover rate? What is our diversity? What engagement look like? What is headcount? You'd be surprised by how many CEOs don't know how many employees they have on a day-to-day basis. And so when HR is being bombarded with all these questions, they typically have to go inside of any of the various HR systems they have and then look that data up, which is time consuming and painful. What's even more painful is that typically when it's time to do reporting, outside of all these different systems, export a spreadsheet, which typically looks terrible and super messy from a lot of these different systems, combine all these crappy spreadsheets into one even messier, crappier, bigger spreadsheet, and then try to turn that into something useful, which typically doesn't happen. And so us at Employee Cycle, we simplify and try to remove all the pain out of the process by automating the entire thing. And we do that by an HR person going to the site, creating an account, copying, pasting the API tokens from their different HR systems into our dashboard. And then immediately they get a fully functioning HR dashboard that shows all the data around headcount, tenure, turnover, retention, performance, engagement, recruiting, and whatever systems that they've connected to the dashboard, they see all that data. And our mission is to make HR smarter and more data-driven.
Definitely. It definitely sounds like an incredible solution. For people that are outside of the HR industry, we typically don't really know what HR does like on a daily basis or what information that they need to be successful. So I love the fact that you came up with a solution for that. What actually made you want to create something like this? And what were you doing before?
So a lot of people want to give you that aha moment. They were in the middle of the desert and they looked up and it was three stars. They said, you know what? I'm going to create this snack delivery app or whatever, right? It wasn't that cut and dry for me. It was a little bit more practical. My previous startup was a company called GatherDocs. It was a recruiting software platform. that company quickly merged into an employee onboarding company. And from there, I just kept hearing a lot of HR people, one, looking to become more data-driven, and two, moving into this more full strategic and more data-driven role called people operations. And then I also anecdotally, but also directly, saw a lot of CEOs who really didn't give a damn about people data before, actually really starting to care about it and going to conferences and saying, oh, wow, you know what? Maybe it is time that women get paid as much as men. You know, person, how many men are getting paid more than the women in the same department? I need to know. Or maybe we should have a diverse organization, because who would have thought it? Diverse organizations perform better. Let's look at that diversity. Or you know what? There's a national labor shortage and hiring costs are through the roof. And it's so hard to hire. So you know what? Maybe we want to care more about turnover. And so seeing all those things, and then also having a background in sales and marketing where I use dashboards on that side of the business, said, why can't HR have that same type of automated experience where the systems are just automatically connected to the dashboard? And did a ton of due diligence and research and realized that the market was wide open and there was really nobody else really serving this need, specifically for companies under 1,000 employees, which is where we focus, mm-hmm. between 100 and 1,000. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? This is worth it.
You talked about previously CEOs didn't really give a shit about the data or the people or diversity. Obviously, that's starting to change now. For some, it's very authentic. And for others, they're trying to check off a box or trying to meet a quota. How do you deal with working with those types of companies? How do you gauge who's being authentic about it and who's just trying to check off a box?
So what's interesting is our company, we're not the ethics police. And so whether you're trying to check a box or you genuinely care, we still want you to buy the product. To be totally honest. Right. For the people who genuinely care, we want them to have the product because we know that we're going to help you identify negative patterns, identify negative workforce trends, and really see gaps in different parts of your workforce that you wouldn't have noticed otherwise. Or maybe you would have noticed it would have been too late. For the people who are not authentic, the same thing can happen. And so even though you may not give a shit in the beginning, mm-hmm. and initially, you know what, I'm just gonna buy this just to check a box, the way that we're presenting the data in the dashboard, it would be pretty difficult for you to say, you know what, even though I didn't really care before, now that I actually see we have a problem, whether I cared about it before from a true person or a true human being standpoint, mm-hmm. just being a good leader, I need to focus on the problem because now it's brought to my attention.
Gotcha. What are some things that you think or some steps that should be taken by people in the HR field or recruiters before even bringing on new employees, before the onboarding process even begins? What are some things that need to be done ahead of time to get ready to bring on new team members?
That's a great question. One of the things that I think a lot of great companies do that have awesome onboarding processes is, one, make sure that they understand how and when they want that person onboarded. So what I mean by that is, before the person is even hired, you should already have a process to make sure that when that person steps in the door day one, they understand who they're going to report to, mm-hmm. all the logins and everything that they need should already be there. This person should feel at home. The same way that you go to college and give you a welcome pack. Maybe they give you a t-shirt or a book, or they make sure that in your dorm, there might be on your bed candy or the instructions manual to use whatever's in your room, or here's a map to the campus and this is how you get around. I mean, there are so many people that work at a company, 3 weeks later, they still don't know where the coffee machine is or how to use it. Mm-hmm. And then they feel bad because when they want to ask about it, they don't want to bug people with little things that they think is annoying. So they right. go without not knowing. And then 6 months, 9 months down the line, I really wish I could have got that coffee maker working. Nobody showed them. Now, that's just a little stupid, funny example.
No, it's real.
Oh,
yeah, it happens.
Add up. Like, oh, I didn't know that was a supply closet. Oh, I didn't know that this is the way that we did things. Oh, I didn't know that this is the way how I talked to IT and this is the way that I asked for something. I've been having this problem and I didn't even know that somebody was here that could fix it. And so I've been trying to fix it manually or fix it my way where somebody else could have fixed it in 5 minutes. I've been spending 2 weeks trying to fix this. So now I've wasted 2 weeks of company time trying to solve a problem because I didn't know that there were resources and people available to help me. So step one would be make sure that you have a plan that the person understands when they first get in the door of who they report to, how often they should be interacting with this person, what is the typical norms and rules of the culture, so that people won't have a lot of questions. Because I mean, the cliche is people don't quit jobs, they quit managers, and that's the majority of it. But I personally believe that the remaining percentage of our people quit jobs is just that they never really felt part of the company. And if I don't ever really feel totally a part of the company where I've really acclimated to the culture, I really understand what I'm doing, and I understand how my work connects to the broader vision of the company, then, you know, I'll make sure that I'm doing a good job. Oh, one more thing that I forgot. Onboarding a person with the goals in mind. And so having a two-week or a check-ins rather, or it might be a hybrid of check-in and goals. And so once you start, within 15 days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, within a year, this is what you should expect to be doing. These are the types of projects and the type of work you should be doing. And then we're going to have check-ins throughout that entire time to make sure that you're on pace, that we feel good about you, and that you feel good about us, because it's a relationship.
Definitely. There was a statistic that said that up to 20% of employee turnovers happen within the first 45 days. And you kind of touched on that by saying people don't feel like they're part of the company, they don't have answers to questions that they might have. Do you think that's like the biggest part of it? What are some other ways to prevent that turnover within that first 45 to 60 days, do you think?
So I touched on this a little bit before, but a lot of it has to do with expectation setting. Mm-hmm. So think of a personal relationship. So two people are together in a romantic relationship. And then they move in together. But they never really talked about how they live, right? And so one person thinks that when you leave the room, you should turn the light off. And the other person doesn't think that. Well, one person is okay with all the dishes being in the sink and then doing all the dishes at the end of the week, whereas the other person needs them done every single night. Or the other person thinks that you should squeeze the toothpaste from the top and the other person thinks you should squeeze it from the bottom. I mean, again, expectation setting and letting people know that this is what you expect before you get in the situation, and then confronting when somebody is doing something outside of those expectations is super key. And so what happens is that a lot of people will go into a company and then they'll realize that what they signed up for isn't exactly what they're getting. And a lot of that may have to do with the job description as well. So if the job description says, let's just take a marketing position. This is going to be the most fun marketing position. You're going to come here, you're going to create commercials and draw cartoon characters, and we're going to change the world with your animation, and we're going to do all these cool marketing tactics, and it's going to be on TV, and you're going to be on social media, and you're going to be interacting with influencers, and you're going to go to parties and all this stuff. And then you get there and you're doing boring direct mail campaigns. And you're literally doing flyers that you send out in the mail to people, and you're sitting there designing door hangers or something super boring. Mm-hmm. You're pissed off. You're thinking, well, I was sold, you know, I was sold a lemon. This is not what I bought. And so when a person starts a new job, you have to make sure that what they signed up for is exactly what they're getting, and both people need to be on the same page. And so make sure that you have that upfront conversation saying, now that you've been through the interview, this is what we hired you for. This is what we hired you to do. This is what we expect for you to accomplish within a certain amount of time. If you need help, this is who you talk to. And then if you don't perform, here are the things that we're going to do to help you get on track. We're not just going to fire you, but we're going to say, what are the mental blockers? What are some of the things that we didn't do? Maybe we didn't get in contact with the right person for you to get that project done. And we're actually not going to set, we're not only going to set expectations for when things go right, but we're also going to set expectations for when things go wrong. And then how we manage conflict so that you never really feel like you can't speak up and let people know you're struggling, because a lot of people don't feel comfortable. A lot of people feel like if I tell you that something's going wrong or that I'm not good at my job or that I'm lacking confidence or whatever it is, then I'm going to look I'm going to be looked down upon. Instead, make people feel super comfortable and give them autonomy and make sure that they have the room to be able to experiment and do great work, but also let them know that if something goes wrong, you're not just out the door, fired, but instead it's, this is how we're gonna fix this. So again, I really think it comes down to expectation settings. Make sure that when a new candidate is hired and now they become an employee, that they know what they signed up for, the company signs off on it, and that you actually create this joint shared vision of truth so that both employee and company understand that between day one and day 365 for the first year, this is where you're gonna be, and then reverse engineer them into sizable chunks so that you're giving the employee a long enough time to be able to do work so you can measure their performance. But then the company also has enough time to allow you to see if you're actually good enough and if you're actually doing the type of work that's contributing to the company.
Definitely. Does employee cycle have any type of long-term plan where you work with the companies that buy your product, or is it they buy it and then is there like any follow-up after to see how their numbers have changed, how their data has changed throughout the time that they've been using it? How do you like kind of follow up with those processes?
So that's a great question. And to bring it full circle, we actually do onboarding as well from a product standpoint. So one of the things that's really making us different is not only are we providing this beautiful real-time centralized dashboard for HR and people ops leaders to be able to view, track, share, and analyze the data from one place, but we also have an add-on service when you become a paid customer called a data coach. And what data coach does is exactly what it sounds like, a person that coaches you up on the data to make sure that you understand how to read the different charts. And so bar charts, pie graphs, list, these type of charts are pretty simple. I mean, these are super basic charts, but then we have some more data science-y, more technical charts that most people have never seen, or if they've seen, really don't know how to read them. And we don't only want to make sure that HR is becoming smarter, more data-driven, and using data to make decisions, but we also want to increase the data maturity and step up the data maturity of the whole industry by teaching HR leaders how to actually read and present data in a more comprehensive way so that you can tell a more compelling story. So what this data coach does is once you pay for that service, the data coach does an onboarding call and they walk you through the dashboard to make sure that you understand how to read the charts and understands where you are in your data journey, how data literate you are. And then the most important thing the data coach is doing is helping you figure out if you don't know already, but if you do know, then confirming what are your HR goals and then what metrics do you have aligned and assigned to those goals so that over time you can actually track to see if you're making progress against those goals. And then you have a call with that data coach every 90 days after that initial onboarding call, so about every 3 months, to then see if you hit those goals. And if some of your goals have changed, which they always do, then now let's reassign some new metrics so that you can start tracking those new goals.
Gotcha. One of the things that I think is most inevitable in any work environment is there's gonna be some sort of conflict at some point. And one of the things that I think people are sometimes either afraid, you kind of touched on it earlier too, are either afraid to or just uncomfortable with is actually going to the HR person that they may need to go to talk about the conflict that they had with either a manager or another team member. What are some of the ways that you've dealt with conflict in the past within the workplace? Have you had to mediate any conflicts? And when should people actually go to their HR person and speak up? Like, are there any examples you can give of when is a good time to actually take something to them?
That's a great question. So I'll start off by saying I've dealt with a lot of conflict.
Yeah.
And I think conflict is healthy. Mm-hmm. And I will put some context around that by saying conflict is healthy when you're both trying to reach, or however many people are in this conflicting session.
Situation, yeah.
However many people are in this situation, I believe conflict is healthy if everyone is truly and authentically trying to get to the same place. So what I mean by that is, and I like to use examples to explain this. So if two people are going to dinner and they're arguing over where to go, if one person is arguing because they want to only go to the place that's the shortest distance, but then the other person wants to go to a restaurant because that's where the food is the best, then you might not be able to solve that conflict because you're optimizing for two different things. One person is optimizing for distance, another person is optimizing for taste. And so in our own company, even when I'm dealing with my co-founder, we know that we're going to have conflict all the time. But to resolve the conflict at the beginning of it, we always make sure that we're optimizing for the same thing. And so if we're both optimizing for the best product possible, we can argue back and forth over how we get there, but we know that at the end of the day, it's about building the best product. Mm-hmm. And so if it's this feature over that feature, or if it's raising money to build more of the product versus sales or marketing, whatever it is, if we're optimizing for the best product possible, then we know that whatever we're arguing for in our different points and perspectives, it still has to be to get to the best product possible. Now, one of us is arguing about, we want to make sure that, I don't know, that you have more equity, or you're arguing because you have, I don't know, you want better lunch perks or snacks or something, and then the other person trying to get to the best product, then there's no way that it's going to come together.
Right.
But my co-founder and I have really worked through a lot of kinks to make sure that we are always optimizing for the same thing. We might have two different perspectives of how to get there, but we're both trying to get to the same place for the same reason. And so when it comes to HR is interesting because HR is in this gray area where some people don't trust HR because they truly believe that HR is only the representative for the company. Mm-hmm. People believe that if I can't talk to HR, then who can I talk to? Mm-hmm. A good HR person understands that regardless of how much they might not want to put themselves in this position, part of their job is going to become a therapist. And the reason why is because people are complex, we're complex, and it's not just numbers on a spreadsheet, but you have the emotional side of people. Mm-hmm. And some of it is logical, some of it is not. And so people are gonna go to HR, they're gonna go with their not only work problems, but personal problems. And if it is some type of conflict, then hopefully HR will be able to play a part in this where they have enough of these conflict resolution skills to be able to either solve the problem with one person, I mean, if they absolutely have to, then bring both people together to figure out how they can solve the problem. And then ultimately, if you can't solve the problem, then you have to make a hard decision of whether or not you want to let one of the two people go or both of them go.
You've had startups before and you've worked in different companies in the past. What are some of the things that you notice that makes a work environment toxic?
So I've never worked in a toxic environment personally. Mm. And I think Well, not to say, well, clearly there have been toxic environments in tech and advertising. That, I mean, that's my background. I've always been in tech, marketing, and advertising. Fortunately, all of the environments that I've been in have been pretty healthy. The people really love their work. People really respected each other and their opinions. People were pretty nice. And people had their conflicts, of course, because we're people, but there was never a lot of drama in any of the places I've worked. Now, what I can say is things that I've seen at other companies are when people are pitted against each other, particularly in roles that are hyper, hyper competitive, like sales. Then you point where people are stealing deals, people are always looking for their next meal, and so they'll do whatever it takes. They might break the rules. That clearly will create a toxic environment. If you have an environment where people aren't necessarily respecting women or respecting the other, and I'm just going to click the other button, other being any type of minority, whether it's women, people of color, people with disabilities, different sexual orientation, any type of other, that clearly can create a toxic environment. I think typically those are the two. One where it's a dog-eat-dog world, and then people aren't necessarily respecting the other.
Got you. And then on the other end, personally for you, or just things that you've seen, what are some things that need to be present in order for people to be productive and thriving? So you said people loving their work, people respecting each other. What are some other things, even personally for you, that need to be there for you to be healthy?
I think one of the biggest things that allows people to be productive is trust and autonomy. People hate to be micromanaged. Co-founder and CEO of my company, but if I ever feel that an investor is trying to micromanage our situation, it feels bad.
Yeah.
Because what it's saying is that
you don't trust me.
You don't trust me. You don't trust my decision-making process. And then what the hell am I here for?
Mm-hmm.
If you just want to do the work.
Right.
Thankfully, we haven't had any investors that have been that pushy, but I know people and I have friends that have investors that try to tell them their job and tell them what to do. And it's overwhelming and it's ridiculous. So definitely providing employees autonomy, because what that does is, one, I think in most cases, it shows the employee that somebody believes in them enough to make decisions without somebody looking over their shoulder all day. Mm-hmm. There's so many different additional benefits to that and positive feelings you can get from that.
Mm-hmm.
You feel more confident because now people believe in you. Mm-hmm. Two, you feel ownership over your work because you know that everything that you did, you truly did. And it wasn't somebody just telling you what to do and you putting somebody else's vision together. Three, you actually now can hold other people accountable because you're holding yourself accountable. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick one thing, I would think that giving people autonomy is the number one thing for the roles where you can give autonomy, because what it does is allow people to, one, become better decision makers. Because the flip side of it too is that, well, if I'm getting all this freedom and I'm getting all this autonomy to flex and do what I think is right, well, shit, if I mess it up, there's nobody that told me to do it but me.
Mm-hmm.
My name is on the line. My reputation is on the line. So I'm going to make sure that I'm doing the best damn job possible. So yeah. I think giving people autonomy for sure is the number one thing for me.
Those are some really good points. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see companies make that cause employee turnover? Like mistakes that can be avoided that you've seen.
One is not providing a clear path for upward mobility.
Mm.
And again, this is an expectation setting. Not letting employees know or showing them or having room for people to grow. And growth is not just a promotion, but growth is just any type of professional development, because there are stop gaps that you can put in place too, where you could say, hey, we may not have this manager, director, VP, whatever position above you available today, because sometimes you just can't create a new position. You just don't have the money, you don't have the need. However, there are other things that we can do to help you continue to grow, and then hopefully we'll be able to make that position possible. Mm. For a lot of times, you actually do have the positions available. People just don't, they just have no clue how to get there. Mm. So how long do I need to be there? Do I need more education? Do I need a certification? Mm-hmm. Are there certain projects I need to do? Is certain revenue? I mean, what do I need to do to get to this next level? And when people feel like there's a lack of opportunity, I believe that's when people leave.
Yeah. Does employee cycle help to measure that trajectory for each employee at all?
We don't do it on an individual employee level, but we definitely do it on an aggregate level. So motion velocity is one of the metrics that we track. And basically what that means is the number of promotions that you're providing per department.
Mm, okay.
That is actually tracked so that if there are certain departments that have a higher percentage of promotion velocity than others, then you can look to see that if the departments with the low promotion velocity also have a high turnover rate, then maybe those two might be feeding off of each other, and there might be some type of correlation there.
Yeah, for sure. What do you enjoy most about your work?
Taking something that was an idea that probably sounded super crazy when I first came up with it, and being able to bring the smartest people around to build it and execute on it. There's no better feeling to me than literally thinking and dreaming of something that you have nothing to show for it, and then convincing smart people to actually work on it with you and get them to get other people excited, to get other people excited, to get other people excited, to the point where you start building this large team. You have all these people working together on this common goal and this shared vision. To me, it's just super exciting.
How do you deal with the pressure of that that's on the other side? So just the general ups and downs of entrepreneurship, because you've been an entrepreneur for a while now. How do you deal with the pressure?
So for me, there are three things. One, when I pray, go to church. So, I try to go to church every Sunday if I can, to make sure that the spiritual side of me is ready for this, because roller coaster, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
From a physical standpoint, self-care is really important. So
boxing, right?
Boxing. Everybody fights. Shout out to everybody fights. From there, three to 5 days a week, sometimes six. Crazy week, punching the hell out of the bag and doing mitt work and whatever else.
Is it kickboxing or just boxing?
Just boxing.
Okay.
Just boxing. And it's cool because it's one of the only boxing gyms with a full gym there too. So it's not just boxing. I mean, there's mitt work, and then there's different high intensity training classes with boxing, and then there's the bags. Then I also have yoga and road, and they incorporate boxing and everything else they do too. So that's great. And then from a mental standpoint, I try to make sure that I'm just learning as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I take out all the ego as much as I possibly can, which is hard. Mm-hmm. And because on one hand, being an entrepreneur, you have to have a certain level of ego.
Right.
Because you're convincing people to work on an idea you came up with. You're convincing customers to buy something that you came up with.
Yeah.
You're convincing investors to invest in something you came up with. Mm-hmm. So it's this weird balance of having enough confidence in what you're doing to really say, hey, this is the shit. This is going to work. This is going to make it. But also having enough humility to say that I don't know everything. Mm. I listen to a shit ton of podcasts. I listen to 2 to 3 podcasts a day. That's why I love catching the train to the office, because that gives me the ability to listen to 2 to 3 podcasts a day, and I just try to soak up everything I possibly can.
Yeah.
The smartest people I possibly can. I try to be the dumbest person in the room.
Yeah.
As much as possible so that I'm always learning.
That's awesome. How do you plan to scale for the future?
Sure. So one of the things that we're doing is we are offering a freemium model for Employee Cycle, which means that HR leaders can create a free account by going to employeecycle.com and they can connect their HRIS system for free. And so HRIS system is the core system, and HR people will know what this is. But if you're using systems like Sapling or Bamboo HR or Namely, you can connect that system. And then if you want to connect any additional integrations, you have to pay. But one of the things to scale is really by creating this free account, because we want every single HR and people ops leader to become data-driven as quickly as possible. And we want to remove that hurdle of payment and cost to our people who are data-driven. So at least you can connect that one system for free. You have no excuse now because Employee Cycle exists. On top of that, we're building out great integration partners. We're partner with the company Greenhouse, the recruiting software, and there's a lot of other partners and a lot of other systems that we integrate with. They're looking for us to be integration partners, which is awesome. We have PR coming, like outbound email. I host a podcast myself, which I mentioned. To date, I believe we posted 54, 55 episodes already. A kick-ass content marketer that's writing blogs. So yeah, things are going well, and to scale, it's really going to be just continuing to bring on more happy customers and build out more integrations and more features.
How long does the free model last that you mentioned? Okay.
It's free.
Gotcha.
Really free.
And is it a limit to how many how does it work? You said they can connect their system. So
yeah.
Does it cut off after a certain amount of?
So the way that it works is the free model or the free tier allows you to connect your one system to the account. So you get one integration, you get one user and one dashboard.
Okay, got you.
Right.
Got
and then you. Once you pay, you can get unlimited users, unlimited integrations, unlimited dashboards.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, Bruce, for sharing your expertise. You made some really good points about how to create and maintain a healthy work environment. So tell people again where they can find Employee Cycle and find you directly to reach out if they want to contact you.
Sure. So you can find Employee Cycle at employeecycle.com. Please come to the website, sign up. If you're an HR person, get smarter and more data-driven. If you're not an HR person, tell your friends to go. So employeecycle.com.
Nice.
On LinkedIn, I am not a huge social media person. I do have a Twitter account and an Instagram, but that was upon me. I really don't spend any time on social. I just don't
think
about what people have for breakfast. So
what about the podcast?
I know it's more than that. Oh, you can find the podcast from the website. So if you go to the website, click on the link for the podcast. You can also find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, all your podcast players.
Yep.
In a couple of days, the podcast should be accessible through Spotify. So make sure you listen to the podcast as well. It's pretty fun. And a lot of people like it. So I'm assuming it's good.
Nice, nice. Well, this webinar is brought to you by Penji. We provide on-demand graphic design to businesses, startups, marketing teams, agencies, and more. So you can check us out at penji.co. For more information about that, also the webinar will be available on our website and also on our Facebook page as well so that people can watch it later. So another thank you to my guest, Bruce. Everybody, check out Employee Cycle if you have a need for it, or tell your friends about it, like you said. And have a safe and productive rest of your Tuesday. Thanks for watching.